Hello, it's Tuesday, April 9th, and welcome to Paper Cuts, where we're officially the only podcast to read every newspaper every weekday. If you want to help keep us in reading glasses and get the chance to hear more of our deep dive analysis, remember you can join the Paper Cuts Supporters Club. Visit back.papercutsshow.com, which will give you exclusive access to extra bits. But if you're already a supporter or you're not able to sign up at the moment, here's a way to help us out for free. Share the link papercutsshow.co.uk to three of your friends, family members, or love interests if you want to look smart, funny, and sophisticated. Now, here are the headlines for today's edition. Free Donald Trump? The former president compares himself to Nelson Mandela. The mousing market. Disney is building a curated living community in California. Stop in the name of love. An American man is suing women he claimed ruined his love life on Facebook. Welcome to Paper Cuts. We read the papers so you don't have to. Thanks for joining us on Paper Cuts, the podcast which is more than happy to sue anybody who says anything bad about it on Facebook. You have been warned. I'm Jacob Jarvis, and with me today is sketch writer for The Critic, Rob Hutton. Hi, Rob.
Hello there.
And we've got Pod Save the UK host, Coco Khan. Hi, Coco.
Hiya.
So, what have we got on the front pages today, Rob? Let's start with the broadsheets.
I've got the boring papers. The I, Cameron warns America. Boost Ukraine support or Putin will win. The Guardian goes with Starmer told to resurrect Surestart to help the poorest. Yes, we're now just lobbying the next government. The Daily Telegraph has a preview of the CAS report, which is coming out tomorrow. Children must not be rushed into transition. And the Times, everyone's got a different lead story today. Labour set to close non-dom loopholes, and a lovely picture of an eclipse which happened somewhere else.
Coco, what's on the tabloids? And please say they're a little bit more fun than
well,
that.
Not really. I mean, like the broadsheets today, they're not in cahoots. We've all got different front page stories. So on the Mirror, we've got we'll punish tax dodgers. So that's Labour's £5 billion pledge to crack down on tax dodgers to fund the NHS. Over on the Mail, they're talking about fat cat salaries of council employees, council leaders. A record number of town hall staff are pocketing more than 150k a year, they say. Over on the Sun, it's very important news that two characters from popular culture who many of us may not have heard of have found love. We all love a bit of love, don't we? It's Claire Sweeney from Corrie and boxer Ricky the Hitman Hatton. They found love.
Gosh, that's really lovely. Imagine having to introduce your parents to someone whose nickname is The Hitman. I quite enjoy the idea of it.
And then the Daily Star, of course, they know what the big story is. And it's about how cows could be replaced by camels because they fart less.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know what this replacement program would look like, but it is what the Daily Star are trailing.
Okay, well, I look forward to people eating muck camel burgers in the near future. First up, it's time to talk about Donald Trump. Yep, I'm sorry, but someone has to do it. The former US president has previously compared himself to Abraham Lincoln and Jesus, but now he's suggesting he's actually a little bit like Nelson Mandela. Rob, why is Trump saying this?
There's a lot of Trump reporting in the papers today, but if you want the real Trump story, you have to go to Paper Cuts' favourite daily paper, The Star, which on the front page says, Trumpy ain't no Mandela, family mock orange man baby. Yes, he's compared himself to Nelson Mandela because he might have to go to prison. Specifically in this case, he might have to go to prison for ignoring a court order to stop abusing the judge who has found against him, literally contempt of court. And he said, I don't mind being Nelson Mandela because I'm doing it for a reason. And Nelson Mandela's family say, yeah, not so much.
He's not comparing himself to Nelson Mandela even there. He's saying he is Nelson Mandela, which is another step. Does this comparison seem to make any sense whatsoever? Or
no.
No.
No. I mean, I suppose Mandela was imprisoned partly as a result of sort of trying to overthrow a government. So at that level, conceivably, that, I mean, you know, you can you it, you can make that very tenuous link. I mean, the government of South Africa at the time was significantly less democratic.
Yeah.
And of course, the main difference is that Mandela wanted black people to be able to vote, whereas Donald Trump did everything he could to stop black people from being able to vote and then sort of tried to have their votes overturned. So,
how have people reacted to this? I mean, the family have obviously said, this is bollocks, Donald, but how are the papers taking it?
Well, most of the papers, to be honest, are ignoring it. The Times has got rather more serious Trump stuff, which is that he's about to meet Britain's David Cameron. Remember him?
Yes.
Another figure from a past decade who's going to try to lobby him to sort of to try and support Ukraine.
Okay.
Cameron is, I think, basically going to be certainly the first British official to meet Trump since he stopped being president. And the Americans can't get support for the Ukrainian armed forces through Congress because the Republicans are being mad. So the idea is that if you can persuade Trump in his vanity that this is a good thing, then the MAGA Republicans will fall into line, is basically the idea.
Yeah, so convince one mad former politician to sort of urge the current mad politicians to do the right thing.
This is the world we live in now.
Yeah. Coco, is this a bit of a gift to Biden, this Trump comparison he's made of himself? Because one, it makes him look quite stupid and strange. But also, if you compare yourself to someone who's very well respected when you aren't, that starts to make you look even worse by comparison.
Yeah, I mean, I often think whenever Trump opens his mouth that it must be a gift to Biden, but that doesn't seem to play out. I mean, he's got his base, and no matter what he does, he will always have that base. They are attracted to his narrative. And in a way, you know, when he talks in this way, he's kind of shoring up that perspective, i.e. they're coming after me because I'm an outsider. You know, like Rob, you said very succinctly that the comparison between him and Mandela is tangential. The only comparison is that he tried to overthrow a government, same as Luke Skywalker. And, you know, so I'm expecting there will be more comparisons to come. It is interesting with the kind of racial aspect of it, because Nelson Mandela obviously has been a great champion of black people's rights and an inspiration to black people around the world. Trump famously has a problem with black voters. He can't win their support because of obviously the awful things he's done and disenfranchising them. Will that be enough to kind of put the kibosh on any support he might have from that community? I don't know. It remains to be seen. It's weird to think that there's still undecided American voters, but there are.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that matter, really, ultimately, in this. So will this be enough to sway them away? I don't know. I mean, it's really difficult, isn't it? I mean, with the insurrection charges, you can see how the political narrative that he's unfurling, that he's a victim of state persecution, you can see how that plays out. But the porn star hush money thing, I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't really have a straight answer on it, but it's definitely it will go up in the classics of Donald Trump phrases such as Kafifi and Bigly and other such ones.
There's a great Stephen Collins cartoon in The Guardian this week, actually, which is just about the awful thing about us all in Britain having to bloody care about, you know, American politics and state-by-state votes and weird sort of crypto-fascists who may or may not be put in charge of the Defense Department or the Treasury. And it's the awful sort of wearying sense that, oh, we're all going to have to be across, you know, who's resigned this week. Mm. And is he going to start another war somewhere, or, you know, do something mad that is going to have some weird knock-on effect in Britain that we can't possibly see? It's just this feeling of dread, I think, that's seeping across the rest of the world. I don't know how Americans feel about it.
I have a quantity of dread, and it's all being spent on Britain at the moment.
Yeah.
So I'm finding it quite hard to... Where am I getting these dread reserves from? Do you know what I mean?
California, here we come. It's a big win for Disney adults as the House of Mouse announces it is expanding into curated living with 2,000 homes near Palm Springs to be built. So The Guardian is diving into this. The stand first to this piece reads, starting at $1 million, a Disney home offers Disney art classes, Disney dinners, a Disney clubhouse, and a Disney lake that never changes color. Coco, can you talk me through this story?
Right, well, it sounds like my worst nightmare, to be completely honest with you. But it's somewhere between a never-ending holiday resort and a retirement home, I suppose. So the Disney town is offering 2,000 homes in this area that's going to be curated by Disney for a fee, might I add. You know, you have to pay $10,000 a year after your initial $20,000 joining fee. And that's after the purchase of the property, which start from $1 million. But anyway, nonetheless, you get this 365 days a year calendar of Disney themed experiences, from you know, art classes to performances. Even the actual area itself is made to look Disney-fied. So, for example, a number of the houses are quite slanty, a bit like from Incredibles 2. There's a lake in the centrepiece of this town, which is an unnatural shade of blue. It refers to the film Avatar. It's basically Disney's push into property, because all their other endeavours are not going so well, particularly Disney Plus. So they're not having a great time with streaming. This is big Disney, essentially. Mm. And I suppose the question is, would anyone sane want to go? You said the word Disney adults there, and I felt alarm.
Yeah, it does. It stresses me out. Although the costs that you're talking about sound like it could be a flat and a ground rent in London somewhere. So maybe actually moving out to this Disney retirement home could be quite good. I like the idea of also being the miserable person who lives in one of these Disney houses but refuses to pay for Disney activities. Just as like, no, I'm not going to keep paying the ground rent. I'm over that. Does any of it sound fun whatsoever to you? You said it sounds a bit like a nightmare, and I would agree. But I don't know, for a short period of time, it's sunny.
Look, I was thinking about it way too earnestly, and I think I would do it as a day trip, possibly one overnight stay, 2 days max, because it is interesting, because Disney uses its movie stagecraft capabilities to create this space. So, like, one of the nuggets that's pulled out in The Guardian is they talk about how they use colours to make the grim and grey parts of life, such as like lampposts and electrical boxes, fade into the background using some sort of colour grading. You know, that's quite interesting. So you would feel like you're on a set. So, you know, I've not been on a set before. Maybe that might be fascinating. But to live there, can you just imagine how smiling everyone would be all the time? Constant smiling. Oh.
But you'd have to be a very happy person to live there. But also, I think, a particular brand of unhappy person to actually find that lamp posts and electrical boxes were degrading your quality of life on a day-to-day basis. It's a weird mix of your mindset there. Rob, are you considering a move?
Right, well, my first thought about this is I'm aware that I'm the only person here who has been to Legoland recently and has stayed in a Legoland hotel. Yeah. And I should say right now, I love Lego. Okay. My kids love Lego. Great overnight stays in the Legoland hotel. Anyone wants advice on the best time of year to go to Legoland, I can sort you out.
Yeah. Well, don't give it, because then it will become a bad time to go if you tell thousands of people.
There is a moment when you're staying in the Legoland Hotel, which is all where Lego is everywhere, everything is made out of Lego, there's beautiful models, and for the first 6 or 7 hours, you're, this is great! And, you know, even the chips are Lego brick shaped and this kind of thing. And then you wake up your second day of Lego land, and the first thing you see is a Lego model on your bedside table. And even I thought, I've seen enough Lego.
Yeah. I imagine the bed's very uncomfortable if it's made of Lego as well.
Is there like an experience where you walk along and you accidentally step on a Lego brick?
Well, I mean, there is that, because they give you Lego in all of the rooms for your kids to play with. So your kids sort of curate that bit of the experience for you.
You just like this idea of the Disney town. You know it's going to be the backdrop for some sort of murder situation, some sort of widespread polyamory, sort of sex cult situation. It's just obvious that's what's going to happen.
There's a rule in Britain that no one is allowed to die in Parliament. If you die in Parliament, they carry your body over to the bridge to St. Thomas's Hospital and they declare that you died there. Oh, really? And I think that Disney will have something similar. If you get murdered in the Disney parks, you'll discover that actually, no. That's it happened down the world in the Universal Resort.
Oh, God.
If any A24 producers are listening, we've copyrighted the idea of the Disney Town horror. The headlines are the creme de la creme of the newspapers, where the sub-editors really flex their scintillating wit and leave us all dazzled by their wordplay. Most of the time, at least. Anyway, so what gems have we spotted today? Rob, you've got a clean sweep from the sun.
I'm going to start at the back and work my way forwards. First of all, there's one name actress, Zendaya. Okay. You might think of her as her out of Dune. I slightly think of her as her out of Spider-Man. but she's now her out of a new film about people who play a popular racket sport in the summer. And the headline is... Anyone for Zenis?
Zenis.
Okay. You see what they've done there?
Yeah.
It gets better. so next, we've learned from The Apprentice that candidates who are being summoned back into the boardroom or being taken to the boardroom at all are not allowed to go to the loo. Basically, once they're in the boardroom, they just have to cross their legs, often for hours, which. May explain why they all look so nervous and shifty when they're there. And the headline is, Lord Sugar will see Lou now.
That's pretty good. But I mean, the story's better than the headline, isn't it?
The story's better than the headline, but here is my winner, where the headline is definitely better than the story. Lovely photo of French troops marching on Buckingham Palace in the spirit of cross-channel friendship. They changed the guards so that the France Gendarmerie Garde Républicaine I hope I got that right. sorry, France. And the band of the Grenadier Guards struck up La Marseillaise, which is the best national anthem. But the headline is The Royal Oui.
That's a strong one.
I like that. Well done.
I'll respect that. So, Coca, you've got a clean sweep from the proudly proud to love animals, the Daily Star today.
Of course. You know, you can always rely on them. So I'll tell you about this story, which is about the Grand National. The Grand National is soon to arrive. People are going to spend lots of money on it. I'm not actually sure that's that newsworthy. People always spend money at it?
Yeah.
But perhaps it's the fact that they've totted it up and they think it will be a £1 billion boost to the economy. So for that, they've given it a headline, The Grand Cash.
Grand Cashnall. Nice. Yeah. So that boost is about half of the cost of Disney's Village in Palm Springs, which shows a lot about how well the UK's economy is doing, I suppose.
So elsewhere in the Star, there's a story that really speaks to me, and it's about Rishi Sunak recently gave some interviews to some influencers on TikTok, and he was wearing the Adidas Samba. The Adidas Samba is a very beloved shoe, frequently worn by thrusting young millennials like myself, and he's ruined it, basically, for us. We can't have any fun now. The headline they've gone with is Soul Destroying.
That's
see what they did
good.
There? Soul, S-O-L-E.
I did find it soul destroying. I will recommend, apparently, the German army trainers from Puma, they're the new way to go.
Okay, fine. Because it does remind me of that time that Cameron wore Converses.
Yeah.
And I just refuse to believe that wasn't a choice from a publicist who said, oh, did you know? It was a time of the Arctic Monkeys and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't believe that he would have chosen the Converses.
They spent a lot of time making David Cameron look exactly the way they wanted him to look.
Right, exactly.
I was really impressed with the effort they put into it.
I'm glad for the balance there. Other trainers are available, must say.
Of course. And then elsewhere in the Star, we've got a story about a holiday company that is offering a holiday to women who are tired of their partners going mad about football, essentially. So I've got experience of this. My husband is a very strong Liverpool FC fan. When there's a big match, it can dominate, take over the entire house. You know, suddenly, next thing I know, there are podcasts on the radio, it's on the TV. I walk around and I learn a lot. It's just scouse voices everywhere I go in the flat. Yeah. So perhaps this is the right holiday option for me. Anyway, so they've written about it in the Star and they've given the headline, Ball Inclusive.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think they should have another holiday thing where it's just that people who are obsessed with football can go together and I could speak to people and explain Leicester City's financial situation and not bore them to tears.
I feel like, and I'm sorry for this being a bit blue, but I feel like Ball Inclusive aimed at women who are fed up with their partners is going to sound like you're going to shag someone.
Yeah.
No?
Well, you know, let that be a word of warning to all the men who won't stop talking about football.
Now it's time to talk about love. Well, kind of. Dating apps provide the papers with plenty of content, and today is no exception. So a man in America is suing women for making nasty comments about him in a Facebook group, which he claimed has ruined his love life. And there's no better way to improve your love life than suing, 50 women, I suppose. It makes you look incredibly desirable. Coco, The Times has covered this story, hasn't it? Can you talk me through it?
Yes. So this case concerns Lucas Murray, and he is suing over 50 women for essentially calling him a bad date. At the heart of the lawsuit is a Facebook group, and it's called Are We Dating the Same Guy? So this is all based in Los Angeles, and it's essentially women talking about who they're dating to understand whether they're accidentally dating a philanderer. Now, philanderers are a tale as old as time, but technology does provide us with a new way to kind of safeguard against this sort of heartbreak. Anyway, Lucas Murray was simply texting one potential suitor, and they had a phone call, and this suitor takes to the network to describe the phone call and say that, you know, she thought he was a very rude man and essentially warn other women against him. Mm-hmm. He says that this post, which eventually other women chimed in on, and it became quite a large thread of different women sharing their experiences of this man, that it ruined his love life. And he's essentially had his entire opportunity for love thwarted by this Facebook post and this woman and any other women that commented on it. So that's the kind of nutshell of it. Mm-hmm. It does sound like a nightmare, doesn't it?
It's a very, very strange story, isn't it? It's sort of old school catfish feeling kind of vibe. So the Facebook group on that side of it, though, how do you feel about that? Because to me, there's a comical side of it, but it's also, it's quite strange, isn't it? People can go on dates and then be reviewed in this way.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think with matters of romance, there has to be an expectation of privacy. And in general, we're going through this cultural moment where it seems like nothing is private and people are releasing, you know, private text messages. And I think that is genuinely concerning and worthy of criticism. However, as I was saying earlier, you know, apps are terrible for protecting women, especially. They don't take action. If you send a complaint to the app, they tend not to engage with it, or if they do, it takes a really long time. Of course, someone just being an annoyance, someone being toxic, someone being a love bomber, or, you know, doing things that give you the ick, to use all the common parlance, are not necessarily illegal things, but nonetheless it's the kind of sharp end of the wedge. Apps are not a great place for women, and so we can't be surprised that they use technology to protect themselves and to protect each other. I mean, gossip networks have always existed. You know, anyone that's dated at a university or in an office where there's lots of people, there will be gossip networks about, did you know so-and-so from IT is XYZ? So all they do is kind of formalise that online. And also, I would just mention that in the Times write-up, they include a screen grab of the post. Now, the guy who is suing the women is called Lucas Murray. But on the post, he's referred to as Lucas. So clearly he is on these apps changing details about himself. So before we characterise him as this innocent man who's just trying his best and these women are hating on him, there are signs that he's doing things that are potentially untoward and potentially give us clues that he's not necessarily the best partner.
And he is looking for, is it 26 or 2.6 million that he's looking for here? I can't quite spot it in the headline.
2.6 million. 2.6.
You can't buy him love.
You can't buy love, but I'm sure 2.6, well, it could buy him 2.6 Disney homes. That's better than love. Rob, what do you think to this story?
I'm just having a flashback to the awful moment at 18 where I learned that two of my ex-girlfriends had met each other in a pub. I never knew what they discussed, and I don't want to know. I mean, it is the odd kind of formalization of something that has always happened. And part of the problem is, you know, if I say, well, I think he's a bit creepy.
Yeah.
It's sort of one person's creepy is another person's sweet, slightly. You know, I mean, there is stuff that is definitely beyond creepy, that's beyond unpleasant, you know, that's just like, well, that's illegal. But just sort of having a Facebook group where people are discussing, well, is somebody, you know, I didn't like him very much. That's sort of, that was bad enough when my ex-girlfriends got together and did that in the pub. I don't necessarily want a Facebook. That's the world we live in.
I like to imagine your ex-girlfriends were talking about your Lego collection.
And, quite possibly.
How uncomfortable your Lego bed was when they stayed over must have been a real nightmare. There's another story, isn't there, though, that's about a more organic love story in the eye.
There is. I'm glad to be smug and married, says Stig Abel. And we met long before unromantic apps. Okay. So Stig Abel is the now morning host on Times Radio. And he's talking about the joy of being middle-aged and in a long-term relationship with somebody that he actually met in real life at the office some years ago. I mean, I just celebrated my 22nd wedding anniversary. So
congratulations!
I also met my wife long before the app. So we did flirt by text, which was then seemed very novel.
God, you went for a lot of credit, I assume. That
really shows how worthwhile the message is. 25p each time to flirt.
25p, mate? You need to get a better contract. Never been more than 11p.
And that brings us to the end of today's Paper Cuts. Thank you to Coco.
Thank you.
And thank you to Rob.
Thank you.
Remember, we are out 5 days a week and your support helps make all of this happen. We are a 100% independent outfit and we spend £600 a month on newspapers alone. It would really mean the world to us if you could chip in a little bit to help keep Paper Cuts going. For as little as £3 a month, you can get 20 episodes a month without adverts. Support us with a little more and you can get the extended version of the podcast with extra material, plus access to coveted Paper Cuts mugs and t-shirts, which are occasionally modelled by our panel. Follow the show notes to back.papercutsshow.com, that's back.papercutsshow.com, to find out more. Our beloved supporters also get a shout out on the show, and here are some now.
Thank you, and did you ever know that you're my hero, Jamie Randall?
Thank you, and you're everything I wish I could be, Tess McMahon.
Thank you, and you are the wind beneath my wings, Jonathan Buisson. I've been Jacob Jarvis, and you've been listening to Paper Cuts on a day when Ireland's Eurovision entry has announced she is a witch and has been following witchcraft practices for years. Hopefully, she can cast a spell on the audience and leave them bewitched. If not, c'est la vie. See you tomorrow.
Paper Cuts was written and presented by Jacob Jarvis with Rob Hutton and Coco Khan. The producer was Liam Tate, with assistant production by Adam Wright. Music and audio production was by me, Simon Williams. The group editor was Andrew Harrison. The managing editor was Jacob Jarvis. And the executive producer was Martin Boytosh. Paper Cuts is a Podmasters production.